Good evening. James McKenney here with my Science Hour, going right into the show. March 17, 2011, Happy St. Patrick's Day, the day on which all people in the world wish they were Irish. And that's something I don't have to wish for. I can be that every day of the year. So, at any rate, a lot of topics to talk about tonight. There's no way I will fit all of this into 1 hour. So I'll be talking at a rapid rate. Hope you're listening. First of all, a quick announcement. The frequency for my radio show will change March 31st. That's a Thursday, so that's not next week. It's the week after. So make a note of this. It'll go from the 5.070 frequency back to the summer frequency of 9.350. I'm right on that cusp, that 6 p.m. slot in the evening, where it changes from daytime to nighttime. And as we move into summer, that 9350 works better in daylight hours. So at any rate, March 31st, that show, and from there on, I will be on the 9.350 megahertz frequency. So put that on your calendars. Okay. First, I want to clarify a few things. There's been a lot of misinformation and questions and misunderstanding in general about the issue with freeze-dried food. And first of all, I'll address customers. Many customers have orders in. What we're doing is many customers are in the loop. There's food that is still coming in of the freeze-dried number 10 cans. And it's been doing things in the order that orders, fulfilling orders in the order they came in. That's one issue. And so the people that are beyond the limit where it's reasonable to wait anymore, we're going to convert them, and we'll contact each customer regarding the grab-and-go buckets. It's a very good dollar-for-dollar, food-for-food exchange. And we'll be contacting individual customers with those issues. So that will be happening behind the scenes. But, okay, apparently some people who are very misinformed and who also have access to the airwaves tried to call a company called Mountain House. And, of course, Mountain House freeze-dried food was the commercial end of a business which supplied many types of products of freeze-dried and other types of dried foods to the public for emergency camping and other uses. Understand that Mountain House is a commercial company. They deal with the government. Or they do not deal with the government. They deal with the public. They are part of other larger entities which do deal with the government. So somebody out of ignorance called Mountain House and asked them if they have any government contracts. The answer would be no, because Mountain House never has any government contracts. They're a commercial public end of this entity. So it's difficult to explain, but the bottom line is that the number 10 cans, if there isn't any continuing production and availability, pretty much all of it is taken by orders that already are in. And everybody in this industry knows it. There are some people selling one can at a time. I wouldn't sell one can at a time. It's going to, well, it would do somebody some good, but basically the issue is that in terms of availability and quantity, we're talking about thousands of people needing cases and cases of freeze-dried food. That availability really is not there in a reasonable time frame for people to order and get it in a reasonable time frame. Some orders would be out as much as 6 months. We don't have 6 months, I don't think. We'll be lucky if we have 6 weeks. So the grab-and-go buckets, which are on my webpage for sale, are in the warehouse. They're there, they're available, they're ready to be shipped, and that's why I'm going with those. And so I'm not sure why this seemed to irk a couple people into making some, but anyway, I don't want to go into detail. There's so many topics to cover tonight. I just had to clarify that issue with freeze-dried food, and the grab-and-go buckets are available. All that is explained on my webpage, so I suggest you go there for the details. And as I said, those are in the warehouse ready to ship in quantity. So the webpage, JMCC, S is in Sam, C is in Charlie, I is in Indigo.com. So at any rate, okay, no use in wasting good airtime over people who start rumors, things like that, and have no understanding of the industry, that type of thing. So I'll just leave it with that. So I hope that explains that. Mountain House does have pouches and other types of products, but in my way of thinking, people are in need of number 10 cans, the large quantities, and that's the kind of thing you need for long-term survival food. You need a quantity, months and months worth of food, not a little pouch here and there. Okay, enough of that. Okay, the topics I'm going to talk about revolve around the Japanese issues, and there's worldwide issues here, so I'll be bouncing back and forth between these. This week, the three top physicist engineers who worked on the designs, headed up the design teams for General Electric 35 years ago, resigned in protest from that company, General Electric, who markets internationally the nuclear power plants, many of which are in Japan, and that they're having problems with. And these scientists told the government and the General Electric that these designs were flawed in that they would explode. They couldn't handle the load under certain high stress situations, which we're seeing right now. The company, you know, was so hot to sell this stuff and that they went ahead and did this. And this is the epitome of what I have been talking about all along. Scientists and engineers do not control the technology and the inventions that they produce. They get into the hands of politicians, businessmen, and into political arenas, and the scientists lose control. This is a terrible example of the model that is being run in Western society. Engineers and scientists are commodities. They're bought and paid for. I don't work in that light. I work under my own. If I do something, I fund myself, and when I go to international meetings, sometimes with up to 15,000 scientists there all at the same time, my name badge says James M. McCanny, Independent Scientist. Everybody else there has an affiliation. They work for the government, a company, a university, an agency, someone, a magazine, a periodical. They work for someone who depends on that loop to exist, and you don't rock the boat if you're in that loop. And so the bottom line is, and this is dealing with probably space science, physical scientists, but the story is true for engineering, for nuclear power plants, for just about everything you can imagine where scientists and engineers work. Scientists do not control the technology they invent. In the issue in Japan, should have been averted 35 years ago. It was an accident waiting to happen. Hundreds of these nuclear power plants in danger of going off in the four. I understand that it's up to four now. Using plutonium, bomb-grade plutonium. This started during as the Cold War ended, and you can imagine that there was a commercial commercial motive for the end of the Cold War. Part of it is all the nuclear warheads that were built up, thousands, tens of thousands of these between the United States and Russia and other countries. Now that bomb-grade nuclear material is being used in these reactors. That was never meant to be. There were other materials that they were going to use, a lower grade, not bomb-grade. So now when these are blowing up, you literally have bomb-grade plutonium and other nuclear materials in these reactors. So, you know, here is once again is just an error on mistake, on greed, on just the epitome of all of the bad things that the human race has come to be, all rolled into one in the disaster. You have Japan as a nation chasing after basically the dollar, trying to simulate the American Western economy and racing towards it, and in trying to succeed every day to be in the world economy. You have millions and millions of people on that island, on the islands of Japan, working towards this goal of economic success and never putting any resources towards what you would call emergency preparedness. So now you have the situation with the radioactivity, you have the aftermath of the earthquakes, the ongoing earthquakes. And by the way, I have said on my webpage, and I'll talk about that in terms of all of the issues that have been going on in the world, is there a man-made contribution to this? I can't answer that question. Most people have to sense this. I've been on radio shows as guests, and I can tell you that around the world, the general consensus amongst the thinking public anyway, is that these events have had a little helping hand. They're not just natural events. When you look at Australia, New Zealand, England, Northern Europe, Japan, last year Burma, 2 years ago when the five hurricanes rolled over Cuba in succession towards the end of the hurricane season that year, and about 2 weeks apart, with the last one running lengthwise down the entire island as the U.S. offered economic aid. Well, of course, Cuba refused because they knew what was going on, and they withstood this pounding. It would be like me standing in the ring, in a prize-fighting ring with a heavyweight champion fighter, and I'm not any match for that, of course, just being pounded and pounded over and over again. That's what happened to Cuba. Obviously, man-manipulated storms, and Cuba simply resisted. They live in an agrarian economy, based economy. Of course, it's modern. But Cuba is a country that has had to withstand the Western banking world for over 50 years. They now are one of the central figures in Latin America and around the world, providing medical, dental, and other their style of providing services to the public, education, where everybody is educated, everybody has good teeth, everybody has access to medical at the same level. These things, and Cuba has survived this. But you look at the rest of the world that has followed the Western model, these countries, once disaster hits, they have no preparedness. In the 1950s, we had civil defense centers in every town and city with supplies enough where people could go. They had a place to go. There were food. There was a shelter. There was a place for them to be. They were all taken down. Clinton took care of that. Also, Clinton had all of our grain reserves sold off, a big capital event for a certain number of international grain traders. But all of our grain reserve is gone. United States stands, as does Japan, completely unprepared for the future, for any type of emergency event. With the rocking of Japan, with these earthquakes, that's going to shake the plate boundaries all around the Ring of Fire, and that leads down to the California, the San Andreas Fault, which sits on a plate that is associated with the New Madrid Fault. So all of these events are associated. So could that then start to trigger events on the west coast of the United States, where they also have nuclear reactors built under the same guidance as nuclear reactors in Japan? Northern Hemisphere, the wind patterns move easterly, and they vary. They blow north, they blow south, they blow east, and so it would literally start to blow radioactive nuclear bomb, radioactive material all over the United States. The issue with these reactors, they depend on electricity from the grid to run the pumps that run the cooling exchange system and the other parts. And so if the nuclear reactor is trying to shut down because it is in an earthquake situation, and also the earthquake destroys the grid system or some other event destroys the grid system, then the nuclear power plant cannot shut down. It can't cool down. And so what's it going to do with all this energy that's being built up that normally would be put out as electricity? Well, The United States has the same problem. Japan had 170-some, still has 170-some nuclear reactors. The United States has, I forget, 104. There's various types of reactors. But these reactors all potentially could be a problem. Western man has painted himself into a corner and has no preparedness. Apparently, I'm told that this morning, Good Morning America, that's that TV show that wants you to make you think America is the greatest country in the world, which in some respects it is, has great people, has a lot of great things, but it has some serious, serious problems and serious, serious misconceptions of what is going on in the world. So at any rate, apparently they did a special on preparedness. And of course, the only conclusion you could come to is that the United States is completely 100% unprepared. If something happens, that big government truck is not going to drive down the street to your house and drop off your supplies for preparedness. I'm sorry, that isn't going to happen. Okay, I'm going to move on to some other topics very quickly here. Entire countries we've seen go under. Australia with the flooding. New Zealand with its earthquake. England and Northern Europe with the ocean currents that I've talked before. I was convinced that the BP oil spill was man-made. And even if it wasn't, there was a lot of effort that put into making sure that it did not stop, that it continued to flow. It has poisoned the Gulf of Mexico. Now we are seeing poisoning of the Pacific Ocean with nuclear with bomb grade plutonium and other types of nuclear fallout from the explosions in Japan. Burma, I mentioned a couple years ago, where typically in that part of the world the hurricanes, the typhoons, move west. There was one that hooked around and came easterly on the day of the national elections that were set to do two things: solidify the national Democratic parties there, democratically elected, and also to throw out the Western European banking community. Isn't that interesting that a typhoon went through there, and then they were accused of not taking care of their people when the U.S. ships were not allowed to land there? There's questions on the tsunami in Sumatra a number of years ago, if that had a little help from our friends also. These are so-called all natural events we've seen in the United States. Katrina, obviously blowing of the dikes in New Orleans, clearly manipulated events. And then the bad, bad science that comes along to try and justify this and make it sound like, oh, this was that storm Katrina that went by. Katrina had already gone by. There was a small surge that had come into Lake Pontchartrain. But the dikes were blown very strategically around the city of New Orleans to make sure it was flooded and basically destroyed. Interesting enough, Bill Clinton had offered to, rich New York tycoon, he has his own TV show. You're fired guy. I'm sorry, I forget his name. I know you all know who I'm talking about. Offered Donald Trump. Bill Clinton offered Donald Trump the week before Katrina to rebuild the city of New Orleans downtown and ask for his support. These type of events, so-called natural events, have been the popular events, but they're destroying entire regions, entire cities, New Orleans being the fifth largest port in the world. When you see these things happening, you start to see things on a global scale. The only thing you can ask is the United States next? Well, all I can tell you is I believe they're in line. I don't know if they're next. But 1 week before Japan took its hit with the earthquakes, the government went in on the food industry and basically pulled out about 6 months, at least 6 months, worth of production of food, of the emergency type of food. Now, why is that? Why is that going on? And so there again, that's where the confusion came in. When with people, I made comments on my webpage. I never ever said on my webpage that Mountain House had government contracts. I never would say that because Mountain House never does have contracts with the government. But the companies that do not talk about them. And any talk show host out there who provides misinformation to the public has absolutely no idea what they are talking about. Anybody with a government contract to supply emergency food to the government is also under gag orders, so they can't talk about it. They cannot talk about it, nor would they, because it would also be a national security issue, and because a lot of this food is being used for the military. So get a brain out there, some of you talk show hosts, and start to understand that you don't know what you're talking about. Okay, enough of that. And as all this is going on, I see that Obama, the President of the United States, is predicting basketball scores. So it's good to know our President is very busy these days. Okay, talking about radiation as it will start getting to the United States, one of the things I wanted to explain briefly on the show is how the jet streams work. Japan, of course, is spewing radiation. This goes into the air, and it hooks onto dust particles in the air. The radiation typically rides on dust. It's called fallout, or it gets into some other medium to be carried. It goes as, and then it gets up into the jet stream, and it can be carried. So I wanted to explain how the jet stream works so that people understand this and understand the potential for any of this coming to the United States. Of course, they're the parts of the nuclear power plants, including the cooling rods, that have blown into the ocean. Now, the cooling rods are in the cooling part of the heavy water that are in the nuclear reactor cooling units. They dip down and they basically absorb neutrons. That's their job. And so also they are in the mix of the nuclear reactive parts of the rods are not something that you want to let go and let out, just like the nuclear waste from the power plant. But this is when the power plants blow, all of this material potentially is blown up into the atmosphere. Okay, what happens to it at that point? Most of it settles down in a very short order in the surrounding area, but then it moves into clouds and up into the atmosphere where it can move up fairly high in the atmosphere and get into the jet stream. Okay, how does the jet stream work? What is the jet stream? The jet stream is a high altitude wind stream that circles the Earth. There are three of them on planet Earth. Let's start with the basic equatorial jet stream. It circles the equator and it moves in a westerly direction. So it moves way south of Japan. It's not a factor relative to Japan. It's well south of Japan and it's very narrow. It moves in a westerly direction pretty much linearly around the equator. There is a northern and a southern hemisphere jet stream. They both move in an easterly direction, and you can think of them as a snake. If you looked at the globe, the jet streams are up in the atmosphere, fairly high in the atmosphere, and they can move anywhere from 100 miles an hour to 6 or 7 or even 800 miles an hour, sometimes faster. And they whip around and they look like a snake. And a snake it can coil up, it can expand. Basically looks like this snaking current. Let me give you an example. A lot of times in the winter, the jet stream comes across the Pacific Ocean, picking up water, swings up towards Alaska, crosses the Arctic Circle, and then comes down into the United States. But it whips around. It can be as far west as Oregon, it can be through Minnesota and the central Midwestern states, or it can be as far east as New York. It can dip down as far as Florida and then swing back north again. In the cusps between where this jet stream swings north and then swings back south, that's where the high cells typically sit. The high cells, which typically give you clear air, warm clear skies, I should say. And then the where the jet stream dips to the south and then moves to the north, that's where the low cells sit, and that's typically where you have storm systems. And these, by the way, link all the way out into outer space. This is all well connected with activities in outer space. But that's not the point. You can read more about that in my weather book. So at any rate, what does this have to do with Japan? Well, Japan is a northern climate continent. It's a mini continent, or giant island, if you will. And the jet stream, when it passes over, might be coming from the north, it might be coming from the south, it might be coming from the west. It depends on this snaking jet stream. But as this radioactive fallout is picked up and drawn into the atmosphere, it will follow that jet stream slowly dropping out and working its way into weather systems that cover the Pacific and cover literally all of the United States. This past week, somebody told me that someone was saying that all of this radioactive fallout is going to go to Oklahoma. That is patently false. Everybody is going to get their share of it, and probably over time, an equal basis. How much will there be? Well, the problem with bomb-grade plutonium and other types of radioactive materials that are related to these reactors, you have a problem. There are very small trace amounts of this radioactive material. It is very dangerous. It's very dangerous. And so the bottom line is the world is in a very bad situation. I attended an international meeting a number of years ago, and there was a group of scientists there who were saying that the calculations that the government was using to justify large-scale nuclear bombing or even a small-scale nuclear bombing in the Mideast, that it was not justified. For a long time, it was believed that if you just dropped one nuclear bomb or two nuclear bombs, say that was necessary for a war in the Mideast, according to government plans or whatever, that those bombs would only affect the local area. These scientists showed that that was not correct, that the explosions would take radioactive dust up into the atmosphere, that this dust would continue to circle the Earth, and it would cause problems for the entire world, including potential global cooling, and not to mention the radiation. So at any rate, the point is that relatively small nuclear events can have an effect. Remember when Chernobyl went off. The first time that people knew that there was a real problem with Chernobyl in Russia was when it was detected in the French Pyrenees by a station there was detecting the purity of air, and they're going, where is all... Well, let me back up a little bit. The Chernobyl was an incident, and also Russia lies in this easterly moving jet stream. So the bulk of pollution from the meltdown at Chernobyl went easterly. But after that event, the Russians, out of their complete ignorance and greed, brought in a bunch of welders, cut the metal, the steel in from the reactor, and then some unscrupulous businessmen took it and moved it to Spain and worked it into the world steel market. The sensing station in the French Pyrenees that I'm talking about that sensed the atmospheric quality started to detect radiation, the type that you would expect from Chernobyl, and immediately they knew it was from something to do with Chernobyl, but the wind patterns going easterly, nothing made sense. So they tracked it down to a deposit in Spain where this metal had been moved to this location. And the metal was still so radioactive that it could be detected as far away as the French Pyrenees. So at any rate, a very small trace amount of nuclear radiation is going to find its way into water supplies, into plants, into the ground. It's going to go there, and it's going to stay there. Okay, so anyway, that gives you an idea. How bad will it be for the United States? I don't know. There's really no information coming out. Today, just before the show, I was looking around the internet, and you have people like Hillary Clinton making comments. Why do you have Hillary Clinton making comments about what's going on in Japan? She doesn't know anything. All she is she's a woman that should be clipping coupons and living in Arkansas, you know, retired. You need people with real expertise on these issues to be giving real data and real facts about what happened in Japan and what the danger is to the United States and what level of preparedness has to take place in the United States. And that is not happening. As I said, our president is busy doing basketball picks for the upcoming Final Four. So the bottom line is that people have to basically assume that the government is not doing its job and assume that this is not going to be good and start preparing. I'll be talking about preparedness in a moment. Okay, I'm just going to go through some other notes here. Okay, talked about that. Just a quick mention, Chevron has announced that it has found extensive oil reserves, which make it likely that the Mideastern oil will no longer be necessary. But these, once again, are deep wells. These are vast quantities, and as I talk about in my book, The Diamond Principle, the deep wells prove a number of things. Number one, we have vast amounts of oil. But number two, how did that oil get down there? Once again, the oil companies and the scientific community, especially the scientific community that has to harbor the dirty snowball comet model, have a lie in common that the Earth somehow formed 4.5 billion years ago, and all of this has happened to maintain the facade that we are short of oil. And to keep prices high, these companies have to keep that scientific facade going. Okay, let me see. I talked about that. None of the planners in the Japanese in the nuclear power industry believed that this type of event could happen. The people at the very core of the design issues knew that these type of things could happen. I'm wondering what is really going on in Japan, because once again, you have a statesperson in the United States saying, oh, we're going to help Japan do everything it can do. But literally, what is the real scene in Japan? I'm not there, but all I can tell you is that there must be millions of people starting to get awfully hungry, and there's no food, there's no food availability, there's no water, there's no way to get water or food. People have driven out of Tokyo as far as they could get with their one tank of gas. Japan has to be a country in total economic and physically in collapse, and there's no way to get food or water or supplies to these people, and even if you could, on a short-term basis, you couldn't continue doing this on a long-term basis. So why, when I go to the news, I go around to the news media, nobody's talking about these issues. These are the real critical issues. And why do we have a aircraft carrier moving around offshore? That's great, but it's not going to help the situation. Tens of millions of people, Tokyo, the largest city in the world, with no supplies, with no ability to take care of itself now or in the future. Let me just look at some other notes here. That was one of the issues I wanted to make, is as we see these entire countries going under due to so-called natural disaster, it turns out that the people are extremely unprepared all over the world. One thing I deal with on my webpage is preparedness. And preparedness should be a number of things, and one thing it should be is very simple. If you have a lot of stuff, that's great, but when it comes right down to it, very simple is the best. You need clean water, you need food that's going to last for a long period of time, and then for the very long term, you need a way to produce food yourself. It's always interesting to hear the report that came back to the ancient Greeks from Egypt. And when Solon's uncle of Aristotle went to Egypt to find out where the ancient Greeks came from, they told them that there had been an earth-wide cataclysm. They told him about Atlantis. That's where some of our basic information about Atlantis comes from. And that the earth, well, basically, that the survivors in ancient Greece, the ones that started the civilizations that Aristotle and Plato and the what we call the ancient Greeks, but before them, there was an entire thriving nation that went under along with Atlantis. The people that survived that were the sheep herders and the goat herders that lived up in the mountains. But basically, if you want something for survival, get a goat. They can eat anything. They produce milk every day. They're very hardy. So that's one thing. Stay away from oceans. Oceans are not good things, as the people in Japan have found out. Tsunamis, earthquakes, other events along coastlines, typically hurricanes, other types. But 95% of the world's population lives near the coastlines. And I'm sure this was the case in ancient times also, when Earth also faced severe disasters. I have a comment in one of my books. It's a quote from Charles Darwin, and it goes something like this. It says, "It's not the most intelligent or the strongest that survive, but the species most adaptable to change." Listen to what that's saying, that someone can be very intelligent, and we're seeing that today. People are intelligent all over the world. In Japan was in a very advanced, intelligent society. But let me say one thing and make it very clear, and I've said this, I've been a guest on quite a few radio shows recently. The one thing I say is that everything that Japan did, all of the advancements, all of the technology, the building of buildings, everything they have done, pretty much you could put it in a box and say it has absolutely no value right now. Because the one thing they need, they don't have. The one thing they should have been doing, they never did. And preparedness is very simple. Once you prepare, it's done. Okay, and you keep it up on a maintenance basis, but once you prepare, you're prepared. And it doesn't matter if it's Planet X coming through the solar system. It doesn't matter if it's an earthquake and tsunami, whether it's a world war, or whether it's an economic war, or it doesn't matter what the emergency is. Preparedness is the same. You need clean water. You need food that is stored, and typically dried food. The technology for saving food is very well understood for long term. The type of food that you can store, how to store it. Canned goods are great, but you can't move them. They have water. If they freeze, a lot of times the frozen food breaks down. You can still eat it, but it's not very great. It's just hard to maintain and move in large quantities, the kind you need to feed millions of people. In the United States, we had food silos, grain silos all over the country that were full, and these were maintained for one reason. We had 7 years worth of food for the United States in 1950. In 2011, we have enough food for about 3 hours in the major cities. As soon as the restaurants and the food stores, there's a run on those, and there's not going to be any more. So at any rate, the one thing I have to say is that, including the United States, everybody's running around, going to their job, doing this and that, but as a country and 99.9% as individuals, the United States, if something happens here and we have to shut down and just exist, we're totally unprepared. And once again, everything that people have done in the last 10, 15, 20, and 50 years has absolutely no value. Because after that emergency, the one thing you need is some preparedness, and preparedness is very simple, and we don't have it because the governments are too interested in taxing and running foreign wars and doing everything in the world, letting large corporations rape this country between the banks, the pharmaceutical companies, the oil, gas, and coal, and nuclear industries, that list can grow very quickly into a lot of other industries that have basically been allowed, the insurance industry, the list goes on and on, that have been allowed to come into this country and basically pinhole and rape the American public financially. All of this, and all of the executives, and all of the CEOs, and all of their nice houses, isn't worth a dime, because there isn't preparedness for the day when an event might happen. What can happen in the United States? You already know there's the talk of the New Madrid fault line. It's hard to say how extensive that might be. Far worse on the scale would be a major earthquake like the Japan earthquake in California up the western coast of the United States, with nuclear power plants not being able to shut down. Once again, do you think the United States can learn from what just happened in Japan? No, the United States is still acting as if nothing happened. Oh yeah, we're going to help Japan a little bit, but there's no way in the world that we can help Japan in the long term. We can't even help ourselves. That's one of the first rules also. Another rule of emergency preparedness is you have to stay where you are. Going out and going to other places is not an option. It's not something you should be doing. There are dozens of reasons. So preparedness, and I talked a number of weeks ago about preparedness. I'm not going to go through all of that again, go through my last few weeks of shows. Just to mention, oil, coal, and nuclear energy individually make up each one about, not exactly, but about a third of the world energy consumption. And that's probably more or less true in the United States. So we are completely dependent on industries that provide energy. And as I said a number of weeks ago, we are an energy addicted country. We don't have to be doing what we're doing to exist. Just on a basic existence basis, our family structure is almost nil because everybody is running around chasing the dollar, trying to make interest payments on houses that are tremendously overpriced, on an automobile so they can get to and from work, and then just goes right down the line from there. All of the other issues, when you buy something in the store, transportation is a major expense, where those kinds of services, energy, electricity, insurance, health, dental, medical, vision, all of those services should be monitored. Telecommunications in the United States, an absolute disaster, where you have multiple companies trying to supply, none of which can truly supply the United States with a decent telecommunications service. They're all competing for various segments of the market. So at any rate, like I said, insurance, all of these industries, just basically a grab bag, but the end result is the public has very poor service for a very large price. Okay, so what should a person do? Now, I know there are lots of new people listening to this show every week. I talk to people every day that have been listening for a long, long time. I talked to a person today, a man who has gone back and listened to every one of my archives of my radio shows that are on my webpage at the rate of about 3 per day. This information is there for people to learn. And once your eyes open up, and I get this all the time, I talk to people and inevitably they say, thank you for helping me understand how the world works. Every now and then people say, I don't want to hear about the political side of science or the political commentary. Well, you have to understand all of this is linked together. If you don't understand how it's all linked together, you're not going to understand how the world works, because science and engineering is at the central core of everything we do. And the situation in Japan is a perfect example where science, engineering is not controlled by the public. It's not controlled by the people who invented it. It's controlled by other people, and it's being used to control the public. The energy is the greatest example, where the cost of energy in this country is phenomenal. Who owns energy? Whoever gave the right to the government to take this and distribute it to private companies who would profiteer from it? Throughout history of the United States, the richest people in this country have been what they call philanthropists, people who have made their fortunes off of natural resources and off the sweat and toil of poor people who are out there working, trying to earn a living for their family. Okay, so anyway, how do you prepare? I'll just go through this briefly. Very simple. And I always say, you don't need a place to stay. That's going to come naturally. You're going to find a place to stay. It might be a tent. It might be a piece of metal leaning up against a dirt wall. It might be your nice house where you live right now, and you can continue to stay there. It depends on the emergency. Depends on all kinds of other factors. But the one thing you absolutely need is a water filter, and a filter that does not require electricity or any other types of hookups or gadgets. You just pour the water in the top, and clean water comes out the bottom. I also want to mention right now, a lot of people are familiar with my webpage. I sell the Dalton line of water filters, and there's a number of variations there. A long time ago, a number of months ago, I should say, I think it was about August, I introduced what I called the pre-filter. And I had a problem with it. The problem was it sold too well. Everybody wanted this. And so the orders got out, and it became hard to fill the order, so I actually had to take it off the web page. I'm putting that product back up, and it will control the ordering. But the pre-filter, which is a heavy-duty plastic unit that goes up on top of your water filter, it fits all of the standard size water filters that are on the market today, basically, and then you get powders with it. There's powder A, powder B, and then there's a third powder, which is dirt. All this is explained on the webpage, and the dirt is what is used, or you can use also the other filter powders. And you pour a layer of powder in this pre-filter, and it takes out the gunk, etc., from very filthy water. The dirt will take out nuclear reactive materials, typically that are in the form of dust. They're looking for something to grab onto, and so you don't want to put a nuclear polluted water into your water filter because it'll pollute, it'll grab onto your water filter. So anyway, I am reposting the pre-filter that will be on the webpage by this evening, and as I said, we will control the sales of that item so that as the ordering continues, we will keep it in check. As the ordering gets out too far what we have in stock, we'll just shut it off on the webpage until we're restocked, and then I'll put it up again. So that's, we'll actually monitor that so I don't run into the same thing that happened before. That's going back up. But basically, you need a water filter. And in case of emergency, you can always run water through a bucket with dirt in it. But the problem is, maybe the dirt is polluted also. These are very difficult, but sometimes very simple issues to understand. But basically, in these days when there might be pollution, where there might be natural disasters, a pre-filter is something that is not a bad idea to have before pouring water into your standard water filter. You need food. I don't know if it was luck or God's providence or what, but as the number 10 cans of Mountain House, when it became clear that there was not going to be enough of that product to fill public needs, let me put it that way, that some of that is still being produced, but The problem is, with the demand that's there, it's not going to generally be available to the to you, the public. So what I needed was something that we could ship in bulk, in quantity, and have warehouses of it sitting there for you to have access to and also be shipped on a short-term basis. So luckily, I've got the grab-and-go buckets. This is food, 3 meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and supper, for a one-month period. It's sold in one-month units, and it's very easy to order. If you have 3 people in your family or group, and you want food supply for 3 months, you multiply the 3 people by the 3 months, and you get 9. You would order 9 units of the grab-and-go buckets, and they ship out. They're prepackaged. It's a blend of freeze-dried and dehydrated food. They are cooked, you might say, or heated or prepared in about 4 minutes, and so there's not a lot of cooking involved, and of course you need that so that you're not cooking and cooking, because a lot of times cooking supplies are in short, cooking ability is in short supply. So at any rate, I've got those on my webpage. Also flax. I've been seeing a high increase in the number of people ordering flax. And this is the biblical health and survival food. It's talked about in the Bible and a lot of old texts where the flax seed, the whole flax seed, you can grind it, you can cook with it, you can. It's not best eaten raw. You can do it. But the very hard casing of the seed, you want to break that down before you ingest it. You can cook with it. You can replace any type of oil or eggs with it. It's a universal food, and it has just about, if you only ate flax, let me put it this way, you could exist. And so I encourage people to get at least 1 case per person per year of flax seed, or 2 cases, which would be optimal. And that gives you about 1 small scoop per day, with 1 case per person, 2 cases per person per year gives you about 2 small scoops. So flax is a good additive. There are other things that you would want, probably, such as red winter wheat. I don't sell wheat sprouting materials. That would be just too much for me to try and keep track of. But what I sell is the basics. The things that you, in my opinion, absolutely need. And then I always say to information, because you have to understand how the world works, physics, science-wise, and you have to know how it works politically. And my books teach you all of that. It gives you a well-rounded background into all of the workings of the planet, the solar system, and it talks about earthquakes, volcanoes, the natural causes, how man-made events are triggered, how they use naturally occurring energy sources to trigger earthquakes, volcanoes, also how they can use man-made triggering events to manipulate hurricanes and storm systems. You get a real education, and what I've noticed lately, just in looking at ordering patterns, people have been ordering complete sets of books. Very rarely anymore do I get an order for 1 book or 2 books. It happens, but the majority of people are ordering complete sets of books, and they are reading them, and they give them away to their friends and other people. So these are getting some mileage. And I wrote them for the general public, so everybody can read these and understand. So at any rate, in summary, what do you need? You need a water filter. You need, it's good to have a pre-filter. You need food for a serious amount of time. You need information. And lastly, you need a place to go. Another thing about the food is that it's very portable. You could throw a bunch of this in the back of your car and go someplace. The water filter is very portable. I take mine with me on trips, camping or vacation or whatever. Pour the water out, it folds into itself. You can put it in a suitcase or a backpack and put other things in it, like clothes or other items. And it's fairly easily packed away. It's something you would use in your kitchen every day. I use mine every day. The water filter is in use. It's one of the most, besides, I would say it's used more than toothbrushes and other items like that. It's the thing that gets used day and night all the time. And it's there for emergency. And it's portable in case I gotta go someplace, I grab that, pour the water out, fold it together, that takes about probably 15 seconds, put it under my arm and I go. That's something I would not go any place without. I actually keep one in my car when I'm driving around because you never know where you're gonna be when an emergency hits or how long you're gonna have to be there. So, at any rate, in summary, on the issue of Japan, it was a disaster waiting to happen. It was inevitable, but how are you going to, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, if you walked down the street of Japan and had a sign and said, prepare, everybody would have walked by you like you weren't there. You could do that in the United States right now. And people are starting to wake up to the fact that they have to be prepared, but I'll be honest with you, there are not enough preparedness items, food, water filters, etc., in the United States to supply everybody. This is a process that should have started years and years ago. We should have never allowed a president. How would a president have authority to clean out all of our storage bins? And let me make this very clear, that all of the grain that is produced today, thanks to Monsanto, Cargill, and our other fine genetically modified altered companies, none of the food that's produced today is fit for human consumption. So it wouldn't make any sense to put it in a storage bin because it would make you sick if you ate it. I'm talking about corn and soybeans and other products, basic products like that. Most of our food comes from offshore. From foreign supplies, fruit, vegetables. A very large part of our food source comes from California. It is unknown what the effect of Japanese radiation is going to have on our food supply, on the fish in the Pacific. The world is being destroyed country by country, ocean by ocean. The Gulf of Mexico being completely destroyed at this point. All I can say is it's my belief that this is being done intentionally, and there are people behind this, and I think that a lot of people out there agree that it is just against all probable odds that all of these events are happening one after the other, like clockwork, entire nations being destroyed. And this is just by chance and by nature? No, I'm sorry. You won't sell that to me with any line of you know what. So, at any rate, as far as preparedness, be prepared, be calm, and try and remain somewhat cheerful through all of this. Remember that they want you to feel down and out and oppressed. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.